Welcome to the Busy Leaders Podcast, a catalyst for inspired action, a high-energy, high-fun podcast hosted by Quint Studer. In each high-impact segment, Quint chats with the individuals on how they're navigating today's environment. Quint and his guests showcase best practices and how they work in different contexts. You'll often walk away with tactical tools and tips that you can apply to your own role, business, community, and life. I'm Nicole Webb-Bodie, the Chief Impact Officer at Studer Family of Companies. Quint is a well-known healthcare operator, author, coach, and mentor to many. He has dedicated the last 3 decades to creating tools and techniques that make healthcare a better place for physicians to practice medicine, patients to receive care, and employees to work. He has written numerous books, articles, and his work is always based on evidence, research, and tools and techniques. For more information and to listen to previous podcasts, visit thebusyleadershandbook.com/podcasts. If you're interested in learning about our upcoming events, both virtual and in person, visit healthcareplussg.com. In this week's podcast, we have special guest host Dan Collard, co-founder and partner with Quint Studer of Healthcare Plus Solutions Group, who talks with Clay Linkus about the evolution of the patient experience. Clay says we've moved from patient satisfaction to evidence-based practice to patient engagement. Clay explains that we are now in the patient partnership phase, which means we not only try to affect outcomes at the bedside, but we work to change the patient's behavior like diet and exercise that are impacting the overall health. This level of compliance from patients requires a trusting relationship with providers. High levels of trust leads to better listening, more compliance, which then leads to better outcomes. In this podcast, Clay shares how to build this level of trust and also taking a closer look at the social determinants of health. Clay Linkus is the Managing Director of Patient Experience for ChinMed. His approach to healthcare is an aggregation of what he's learned from his background in exercise science, a full-time ministry role, a black belt in Six Sigma, his master's in healthcare administration, and his marriage to a clinical care nurse. His background has shaped a leader who is driven by compassion, innovation, measurement, and of course, good outcomes. Now here's your hosts, Dan Collard and Clay Linkus.
Well, welcome back to the Busy Leaders Podcast. I'm a special host today, Dan Collard, partner and co-founder along with my good friend and colleague, Quint Studer of Healthcare Plus Solutions Group, where we're having a lot of fun in the industry these days, working with folks like one of our guests today, Clay Linkus. It's always fun to do these podcasts when you have someone that you've known for as long as Clay and I have known each other. You know a little bit about each other's background, but it's always fun on these podcasts to pull extra things out. And I think maybe that's what we'll be able to do today. So, Clay, welcome to the podcast.
Dan, thanks so much. It's great to be here. Look forward to talking to you.
Absolutely. So Clay is the managing director for patient experience for an organization called ChinMed. Many of you know ChinMed as a value-based care organization, really focused on primary care. And Clay, that's where you're hanging out these days, right?
Yeah, I actually started with them back in May of last year and just continue to look for ways we can support the mission there.
Very good. Well, before we talk about, the things that you're doing there, the things you're doing across the industry, it's always nice to start at home. And home, of course, is in eastern Tennessee, near Knoxville, Tennessee, where I used to call home as an office. And it was often that we had a chance to catch breakfast and catch up there. And that's where you are today, right?
That's correct. Yeah. But I lived in eastern Tennessee for most of my life. Been married for 20 years, my wife, Katie, and she's a former critical care nurse. And we actually have 6 kids here, Dan.
6 kids. It seems like every time I talk to you, the number grows. But of course, there's a story behind that, too, before anyone gets any ideas. There's a story behind that. Tell us a little bit about your family.
Yeah. So Katie and I met actually in healthcare years ago. We both worked at the same hospital. I was the University of Tennessee Medical Center and spent time there. And both she worked in clinical roles. I worked in non-clinical and various leadership roles. But kids range in age from 6 to 18. We actually have 4 biological kids. Our 18-year-old actually got married and moved out of the house last year. She's done with high school. That's a long story as well. She's actually finishing up college as we speak. The two newest kids we added about 3.5 years ago. We adopted two siblings, Bella and Jeremiah. They're 8 and 6. And that's a whole nother podcast worth sharing at some point. So, but thanks for letting me share a little bit about my family, Dan.
It's always fun to think about where we've come from. Of course, we spent a number of years together in our previous organization as colleagues, but I want to go back even further, maybe even back from an academic standpoint, from a specialized training standpoint, and then also some of the roles that you feel have sort of shaped your work today in and out of healthcare, because you've got a great story to tell both in and out of healthcare. Where'd you go to school?
Yeah, so I did my undergrad at East Tennessee State University, which is in Johnson City. I actually studied exercise science, and a lot of my peers, they left that and went into things like cardiac rehab and pulmonary rehab. Some of them went into more, traditional fitness types of settings. But I actually took a different path. When I finished up my undergrad, I actually found myself in a full-time ministry role at a church, and would love to share more about that if it makes sense today.
I think it does. Our most recent guest, Tom Mayer, was making some really neat analogies with his academic background in theology there. And I always think it's interesting. We're sort of the aggregation of all these years behind us there. So I want to dig a little deeper on that. And as you move forward, you also did some specialized training in the world of Six Sigma. And, I always notice people's initials past their name when I see their auto signature on Outlook. Why don't we talk a little bit about that? And then perhaps talk about how that pulled you towards some of your roles as well.
Absolutely. So after a number of years in the ministry, we can come back to that if it makes sense. I had some other, professional roles. I actually went back to school about 10 years after my undergrad and did a MBA in healthcare administration. That's actually where I started at UT Medical Center is during that season. But one of the things that I did, too, as soon as I finished up my MBA, I really got just enamored with and infatuated with the whole world of lean. Lean for healthcare was really kind of taking shape at that point in time. And my organization decided to really invest in me at that moment and kind of appoint me or volunteer me to be the lean guru of their organization. So they sent me off to all kinds of lean training and lean certificate programs. But ultimately, my kind of highlight of that part of my background was obtained the certified Six Sigma Black Belt certification from the American Society of Quality, and have used that in all my roles since then.
Great. So we have some healthcare related academic background. We have some work in the ministry. Then we have some advanced academics in healthcare administration, as well as the Six Sigma Black Belt work that you did there. So we've got these three inputs coming forward now. Pull me forward a little bit as you sort of advanced in healthcare, and then perhaps as our paths began to cross in the world of employee engagement, patient experience, and then we'll see if there's a jumping off place for that.
Yeah. So. It was back in 2012 that I was at UT Medical Center, and I was actually at that point in time leading a decent sized clinical area. I was over the imaging and special procedures area, also included interventional neuroradiology. So I worked with anesthesia, had nursing that reported to me. And we were really trying to look at, how do we improve traditional things like patient experience and employee engagement and productivity. And it was at that time that I actually also was the local president of the local American College of Healthcare Executives chapter. And I found myself attending the ACHE Congress in Chicago that year. And it just so happened there was this guy speaking at one of the sessions that I had heard his name mentioned, but wasn't really too familiar with him, and a guy named Quint Studer that you and I both know and love. And so I went to his session. He actually at that point in time was talking a lot about the Great Employee Handbook. And so I picked up the book, actually read the book before I even left the conference, and was just so, you know, kind of gripped by it. And then I realized that this guy had all these other books. And so I picked up one of the more classic ones, Hardwiring Excellence, and went back and really started just applying every bit of that material to my team, fell in love with it, found that we got even better results with the things that we were doing. We found we got, you know, better results, but just even faster results. We were able to sustain stuff longer. And that led me, by the end of that year, I reached out to our friend and colleague, Shannon Liber, and basically said, "Hey, Shannon, like, this is amazing what you guys are doing. I'd like to be part of the team." And sure enough, before the end of 2012, I was invited to be part of the Studer Group team.
Yeah, it always reminds me about how small our world is, and especially in this industry as well. Having had a chance to work with you, having had a chance to serve a number of client partners together, it was always about sort of in the Six Sigma line of thought, better ways to do things, more efficient ways to do things. And so let's park, if we could, in towards the patient experience piece. Know that that can many times be an output of other efforts there. But as we think about the ongoing evolution of patient experience, love to get your thoughts, your learnings in both, you know, our previous organization together and with what you're doing now as well.
Yeah, I appreciate the opportunity to unpack that a little bit. You know, what I have experienced probably over the last 15 years is, like you said, it's kind of an evolution of this whole idea and theme around what we sometimes call patient experience. And I remember back when I was in the hospital setting, that at that point in time, we largely, you know, used the phrase patient satisfaction, and we were using a lot of traditional survey methodology just to make sure that the patients were enjoying the experience they had with us, the care that we provided for them, and found it to be, you know, pleasing to them. And then you saw kind of the industry evolve and mature a little bit, where you saw a lot of incorporation of the CAPS type of surveys, which were much more focused on kind of the frequency assessment of evidence-based best practices. And it was not just, are we making the patients happy, but, you know, are they assessing how well we're actually doing the things needed to provide great care to them? And then you saw some shift even further to where, you know, we looked at the patient engagement side of things, where we started looking at not just are we creating great experiences, but are we actually helping the patients in this continuum of their own engagement, where they are wanting to take more ownership of their care. They're actually being more actively involved in it. They're not just passively receiving it, but really being more invested in it. And that kind of brings me full circle to the day where, you know, in my organization and a lot of settings that we're in, is it's really kind of moved into, like, how do we create this partnership with patient that depends on high levels of trust? It depends on high levels of engagement that leads to two very significant outcomes that organizations are striving for. One is patient retention, so trying to keep the patients that are here with us today. But the second thing is more of that patient ownership and partnership, where they actually are changing their own behaviors. They're not just wanting to be more of an owner, but they're doing things differently. They're eating differently. They're, you know, changing social norms and social behaviors in those settings. And so that's a lot of how we've seen that evolved. And I spend most of my time in those last couple of areas in recent times.
Let's go a little deeper on that, because I think, you know, as you just said, we evolved from the way that a lot of folks used to refer to it, patient satisfaction, to truly the patient experience. We've had some pretty traditional ways of measuring. So I want to go in two different directions, perhaps. Are there some different ways we should be thinking about measuring? You just mentioned one, which is retention. But then the tactics, the approach, I think that's the most fascinating area for us to be thinking about, so that we're not doing things today like we did 20 years ago, just because they were great new ideas then. Why don't you share a little bit about what you see from an innovation standpoint?
Yeah. Well, one of the things that, you know, I find myself, and this is largely what I'm going to share with you, is like experimenting. It's trying to really understand what is going to work, what's not going to work. And it's pulling from, you know, different resources and experts that are out there. But it's this whole idea of what's the science or even the neuroscience behind trust, and how do you actually do things and say things with patients that create a more measurable level of trust with them? And so that's a lot of what we find ourselves doing. And so what we've been trying to do is figure out, can you actually put together, you know, some sort of framework for patients, or not just for patients, but for your care team members, that gives them a model that says, hey, like, if I use this model, I'm going to have a higher likelihood of creating trust. Now, the measurement side of it, I haven't figured out yet. Like, if there's, we know that, like, the key performance indicator for us many times is going to be, is the patient going to stay around, and is the patient going to change behavior? But we've not really nailed down, like, hey, how do you literally measure that specifically? But we are getting closer and closer to saying, hey, here's the framework that we think you need to operate in. And what's fascinating, Dan, is some of that framework builds off of traditional things that, you know, have always been effective, things like ADIT that are there. And it's really taking some of that and saying, how do you even take that to the next level and creating more of that partnership?
It's interesting to hear you talk about trust and then connecting also the trust to the outcomes, because for me, that was always the, you know, when we reduce patient anxiety, we build patient trust. And when we build patient trust, we create in patients those that tend to listen better and partner better there as well. And when they listen and partner better, they tend to be more compliant patients. And when they're more compliant patients, we get great outcomes. And all of a sudden, yep, you can connect point A to point Z even better. Is that sort of what you're seeing, even outside of a measurability framework?
Yeah. Well, and, you know, one of the things that I've had the opportunity recently to sit and listen to a guy that you're probably familiar with, Horst Schulze. He's the co-founder of Ritz-Carlton. And he always shares something every time I hear him talk about this, this science behind the fact that adults, the only way for adults to really change behavior is if they experience some significant emotional event. So we're always trying to figure out, how do we create some significant emotional event that leads to positive behavior change, more loyalty, et cetera. And so, like, you know, we've got emotions that we're really trying to say, okay, let's create more times where the patients are experiencing emotions like happy, proud, accepted, trusting. You know, they're optimistic, they feel respected, they feel valued, they feel loved, they feel appreciated, they feel inspired. And let's create less experiences where they're angry, lonely, disappointed, frustrated, let down, rejected, anxious, confused, remorseful, annoyed. Because we know that those side of things, that's going to be the things that you talked about, like, that's going to create anxiety. It's going to lead to less trust. It's going to lead to less partnership. So what we're trying to figure out is, how do we create this scenario where we're constantly applying more and more experiences that create those positive emotions to reduce the anxiety and to lead better outcomes, just like you said.
Now, there's something else that folks would, I think, enjoy knowing about you, and it's something that sort of takes us out of the four walls of healthcare. Most of the work that you're focused upon right now, of course, is in the ambulatory setting. You spent years inside the more traditional acute setting, but a phrase that has become sort of an everyday phrase in our industry, of course, are the social determinants of health. And as I heard you talk about the human emotions that potentially impact decisions to change there, a lot of those can be tied to things that are away from the bedside or away from the exam room, the social determinants of health. I know you and your wife, Katie, have done some pretty extraordinary work around affordable housing, especially for vulnerable populations. Can you tie the two together for me?
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate you making space for that. You know, it's been fascinating just to see. You know, if you think about most people's lives, it's hard to think about what your life's going to look like in 10 years. But as you look back over your life, you're able to kind of piece together and go, okay, that's why I needed to do that. That's why I went through that season. That's why I did this, because it's all kind of bringing full circle. And a lot of what you know, Katie and I have experienced is if you think back to, you know, you heard a little bit about my background in the ministry and how that really shaped a lot of my thoughts, even with healthcare, because part of what I learned during that setting, Dan, was that, you know, this phrase even rings true in leadership training, is that people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care, right? And so that translated into how I wound up leading teams, leading organizations, is to make sure that there was always this deep compassion and care for people that was baked into it. It's a lot of what attracted me originally to even, you know, work with you guys early on. If you fast forward that to today, you know, if you look at like an organization, even like ChinMed, one of the things that is commonly known about ChinMed is ChinMed is not just focused on what happens to that patient inside the four walls of their centers, but how are we actually helping that patient be successful outside of that? So a good example is transportation. So the vast majority of ChinMed patients have door-to-doctor transportation provided for them. It's one of the ways that we're really trying to help address that social determinants of health, because our typical patient at ChinMed is, you know, 72 years old, probably has 5 chronic illnesses and is moderate to low income, right? So we know if we don't get that transportation piece right, we're not going to get the healthcare piece right. But to get back to your earlier question, you know, what is also a big social determinants of health is housing and access to housing. And what's been fascinating is to see a lot of these worlds collide, because about 5 or 6 years ago, my wife and I did start getting involved a lot more in the real estate sector, and we started getting a lot more involved in affordable housing. We even started a couple of years ago a nonprofit that's focused on actually providing access to affordable housing. And what that has made us acutely aware of is how if we don't get the housing part right, we're really going to have a hard time shaping healthcare. Because if you look at even the patients at ChinMed, one of the most common things they're talking to their doctors about and their PCPs about is the increased rent they're paying right now, increased challenges in keeping their house, increased utility bills. And so if you think about all this stuff together, like healthcare, in my opinion, has to be thinking much more broadly than just traditional medicine. If we're truly going to be a great place for our patients, we've got to be thinking much bigger than that. Things like transportation, things like loneliness, things like housing, and definitely excited to see where that goes for the future for Katie and I.
Sure seems like that connects back very closely to the whole notion of trust as well.
Yeah.
What haven't we talked about today that you'd want to be sure that we've talked about? I always like to sort of wrap things up in that direction.
Yeah. Well, obviously, one of the things that's on my heart is this whole idea of trust, and something that I'm happy to share with the audience afterwards if it's found helpful is just kind of some preliminary look at this framework around trust. Mm-hmm. So the 5 letters of trust, T-R-U-S-T. So the first one is transparent. T is transparent. The R is relational. The U is unwavering. The S is supportive. And the T is teamwork. And so what we're trying to do is get inside the head of a caregiver and say, okay, Mr. and Ms. Caregiver, on the T part, the transparent, how do you make sure that you're communicating with patients in a way that creates confidence and credibility, right? Does this sound familiar to you, Dan? On the relational part, the R, it's how do you ensure that patients know that you're competent, you have character, and that you demonstrate compassion? On the unwavering side, it's how do you let patients know that you're committed to them and their health? On the supportive side, how do you make sure that the patient understands that you're advocating for them and connecting them with other supporting resources, even outside of the organization? And then on the teamwork side is how are you helping patients understand that they are part of the care team and they actually contribute to their own care? So all this probably sounds very familiar to you. It's more of just us trying to understand, like, how do we help give this framework to our care team in a way that they can take it and say, okay, if I'm doing these things well, I am creating that trusting partnership with my patient.
When my wife, Melissa, was in nursing school, I remember clearly her favorite study guide, and they were flashcards. And I think the acronym of trust that you just gave there is kind of a neat flashcard approach to helping simplify what can be a really complex relationship. I think a lot of times when we think about the practitioner or the clinician and the patient relationship, it can be pretty complex. And when we sort of distill it down to 5 letters, We can sort of simplify it there. And we're spending a lot of time these days working on simplifying where these have become pretty weighty topics. And if we can unweight the topics a little bit, simplify them, I think we find better adaptability there as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very good. Well, listen, it's been great having you on the podcast here. I know our audience is going to be interested to hear what we have to say, and then also gaining good learning, given the framework of trust, given different ways of perhaps measuring, given the five-letter approach of trust. Sort of neat to be able to always provide new learning on these podcasts for these very busy leaders that tune in to listen. So thanks for being here. It's been great having you.
No, it's always an honor and a privilege, Dan. So great to reconnect with you, and looking forward to next time.
All right. We'll talk again soon.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Busy Leaders Podcast, a catalyst for inspired action. Please subscribe, rate us, and write a review. For more information, visit thebusyleadershandbook.com.